So, I thought this topic might fit very nicely into our overall topic of hearing, chanting, and remembering. So, as you see on the screen, mantra upasana is our topic this morning. And those of you that like to learn more about it, you can read Sri Brahma Samhita text number 3. There's recordings from the seminar on this, long discussion on this topic. So I'll introduce it this way. It's something, mantra upasana is not something that Prabhupada spelled out, but that we do every day. And so what I'm requesting at the very beginning is, aside from the information part at the beginning, this is a meditation. So I'm requesting, inviting, take part in the meditation aspect. You'll see, I'll highlight it again when we get there. So it's, don't just get lost in the information feature of what this is. This is the information is just to, at the beginning, is just to explain what it is. And then it's an experience or a meditation. Thank you. So we'll begin with a little description of, could somebody take care of the, what do you call it? Keystone. From Srimad Bhagavatam, we have this wonderful Leela of Gajendra Moksha. There he is, there's Gajendra. And there's the giver of Moksha, the personality of Godhead. And in this narration, we find the history of one king, Indradumna, and King Indradumna made a little boo-boo. He was engaged in meditation after his kingdom was turned over to his son. He went to a secluded place on a mountain, and there he was engaged in meditation. And when he was engaged in his meditation, one great sage came, and rather than offering respect to the great sage, he continued his meditation. And the sage didn't like that very much. And he cursed King Indradumna. "You're so dull. You're like an elephant. You should become an elephant." And King Indradumna became an elephant. And but he wasn't just an elephant, he was the king of elephants. He was, he had many, many, many other elephants and she elephants that became part of his little elephant kingdom. And the Leela is described that one day the elephants entered into this wonderful, the description of the beauty of the scenery is pages and pages long, beautiful, fragrances and flowers and trees and birds and humming bees. And so the elephants entered into the lake to take their bath. And as the elephants were leaving the lake, our inhabitant of the lake, the crocodile, decided to chomp on Gajendra's leg and make a meal. But Gajendra was very powerful, and so Gajendra resisted. And they fought and fought and fought and fought for a long time. If I can recall correctly, 100 years.
1,000 years? 1,000 years. That's a long fight. Morning and night and no sleep, no eating.
And even though he was very powerful, he was losing strength, whereas because the crocodile was in his natural habitat in the water, he was not becoming weak like Gajendra was becoming weak. And it then entered Gajendra the elephant's awareness, he was finished. And as that "I am finished" awareness arose, by Super Soul's kind arrangement, he remembered from his previous life as King Indradumna some stotras or prayers that he would every day recite and enter into the mood and the meaning, which I'm going to be asking you all to do also. And so that past life remembrance as a king, the stotras came, and he prayed, one can imagine, very seriously, very intently, with complete focus on the personality of Godhead. There are some other details, but for the purpose of this, I'll leave those details out. And understanding that that prayer was meant for him, Lord Vishnu came, riding on the back of Garuda. The elephant Gajendra was offering a lotus flower when the Lord appeared. And another nice painting. There's Gajendra. There's Lord Vishnu. There's the crocodile. There's Gajendra and some of the other elephants. And the lake, of course. And Lord Vishnu released his Sudarshan Chakra, which you see down here, to sever the chomping part of the crocodile from the rest of his body. And from that crocodile, a Gandharva appeared, because he had been cursed to become a crocodile, and Gajendra was liberated. There's Gajendra in his liberated form. And of course the devas and the sky and so forth. And here's Prabhupada's purport. Gajendra was formerly King Indradumna, and somehow or other, in his next life, he became king of the elephants. When Gajendra was in danger, and although he was in a body other than that of a human being, he remembered the stotra he had chanted in his previous life. Yatate cha tato bhuya sam siddhau kuru nandana. To enable, this is my highlight, but to enable one to achieve perfection, Krishna gives one the chance to remember him again. To enable one to achieve perfection, Krishna gives one the chance to remember him again. So there's the purport, chapter 3 of canto 8. Then continuing, it is imperative, therefore, that all devotees in Krishna consciousness, that means us, practice chanting some mantra. Certainly one should chant the Hare Krishna mantra, which is the Maha Mantra or great mantra, and also one should practice chanting Chintamani Prakata Sadmasu or the Nrisinga Stotra. Ito Nrisinga Parato Nrisinga Yato Yato Yamintato Nrisinga. Here's an instruction. Every devotee should practice in order to chant some mantra perfectly, so that even though he may be imperfect in spiritual consciousness in this life, in his next life he will not forget Krishna consciousness, even if he becomes an animal. Of course, a devotee should try to perfect his Krishna consciousness in this life, for simply by understanding Krishna and his instructions, after giving up this body, one can return home back to Godhead. So, I'm making this reference because Prabhupada is explaining how he wants all the members of Krishna consciousness, the Hare Krishna movement, ISKCON, that's like us, to in addition to chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, to practice every day, every devotee should practice some mantra. So Prabhupada has given us some mantra. Here he's indicating two possibilities. This is from Prabhupada Meditations, is a book collection by Satsrup Maharaj, where he's referencing from this purport. So here's Satsrup Maharaj's writing. Even while in the grips of the crocodile's jaws, Gajendra practiced concentrated prayer upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to the Srimad Bhagavatam, Gajendra, quote, fixed his mind in his heart with perfect intelligence and chanted a mantra which he had learned in his previous birth. So here's the next verse, here's the first verse of that chapter. We saw the purport. Shukadeva Goswami continues, thereafter, the king of elephants, Gajendra, fixed his mind in his heart with perfect intelligence and chanted a mantra which he had learned in his previous birth as Indradumna and which he remembered by the grace of Krishna. So, it's an instruction. There's a good reason behind the instruction. It's our welfare. And one can achieve spiritual perfection, as did Lord Brahma achieve spiritual perfection by the same method. The method described in Brahma Samhita text number 3, and then later on, further in the text, it's repeated that he, Lord Brahma, received from the internal potency Rama Devi, in this case her name, she's identified as Saraswati, but it's different than the wife of Lord Brahma, Saraswati, or the goddess of learning, demigoddess Saraswati. The internal potency of the Supreme Lord, Saraswati, gave Lord Brahma a mantra. And it's called the Gopal Mantra. And this Gopal Mantra, for those who are Brahminically initiated, it's mantra number 6. And that mantra is what he engaged in, that was his tapa. He chanted that mantra for 1,000 celestial years. That's, who knows how long that is. And in the course of that process, he understood his identity, first as an eternal servant of Krishna. Then he further received another mantra from the flute song of Krishna that entered his four ears and came out his mouth in the form of another Gayatri, which then he realized more than his position as a servant, but as a maidservant, but his rasa through mantra upasana. So here's the cover of Sri Brahma Samhita, and here's a letter from Srila Prabhupada to Pradyumna, the Sanskritist disciple of Prabhupada, Panditji, Prabhupada called him. Pradyumna had found a copy in 1967 of Bhaktisiddhanta's Sri Brahma Samhita and asked, is it okay to study it? That's a nice thing for a disciple to do. He asked his spiritual master, is it okay? Prabhupada replied, Brahma Samhita contains the highest of spiritual knowledge. It is the gist of Srimad Bhagavatam, where everything about Krishna is perfectly described. One who reads Brahma Samhita very carefully and scrutinizingly can understand everything of Krishna without any fault. I recommend, therefore, that all my students read Brahma Samhita very carefully, with a dictionary by your side. Especially because it was translated personally by my spiritual master, Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Goswami Maharaj. Now here's, I think we're going to have a sound bite here.
The audience, the hearers of this record, are requested to study and try to enter into the spirit of this hymn with great care and attention as a regular daily function.
So even before Sri Brahma Samhita was published by the BBT, way back in 1966, 1967, Srila Prabhupada made a recording in New York City for his fledgling disciples to engage in this process before we had the book, before we knew, you know, anything about anything other than Prabhupada. So he's instructing in this way that we should engage in, and I remember as a college student hearing that recording, I don't know, a few hundred times, just like it was just like part of breathing and eating and everything else we do that you do every day. Just because it was Prabhupada was purposely giving his association to his followers, and so he wanted us to do this, so many of us did it. And that's his instruction of how we should do it. Here is now a little description from text 3 of Brahma Samhita. And I'm going slowly because the subject matter is subtle, a little complex. Listen carefully. The text describes a process. Bhaktisiddhanta elaborates on the process in the following way. I'm making it much easier than his language. He describes there are Krishna's pastimes that have two features, manifest and unmanifest. What is manifest? Once in a day of Brahma, at least the Vrajalila, Krishna descends from the spiritual world, or he manifests his pastimes in Vrindavan in such a manner that anybody, everybody can see. That's called prakat. And other than his prakat lila, there is a prakat, not manifest. So Bhaktisiddhanta's language calls it the non-manifested pastimes. And then he describes how to manifest the non-manifested pastimes. What that means is the unmanifest pastimes are two. One is what is eternally going on in Goloka Vrindavan. I'm looking up because that means in the spiritual sky there's Krishna's abode, Goloka. And there's its counterpart in this realm called Gokula. And they're absolutely, literally, non-different. Gokula, Goloka, non-different. Although there's some differences, and one of the differences is sometimes Krishna's pastimes are visible, prakat, in this worldly realm, and sometimes they're not visible, but they're eternally going on. They're eternally going on, although not visible. And so he's explaining, Bhaktisiddhanta is explaining, there's a way by which one can manifest the unmanifest pastimes. One can experience Krishna's pastimes today. Or not just wait for the next day of Brahma. That's a long wait. One can experience them. And there's twofold process. One is mantra upasana, this is now a direct quote from text 3, purport. Worship through the channel of mantras, inaudibly recited, liberating, self-dedicatory, transcendental sounds. I'm going to describe it some more, that's just his language. So Jiva Goswami explains in his commentary on text 3, same thing, and he uses a metaphor. The metaphor is, sometimes rivers flowing create lakes. So like something over to the side where there's a lower topography and a lake forms. And one can enter into that lake. And from the lake one can enter into the river. But the lake is still and the river is flowing. So mantra upasana, Jiva Goswami compares to entering into a lake. And it is a process whereby one ideally resides in a holy place where Krishna performed pastimes, like Vrindavan. And in that place, one takes especially configured or styled or crafted or created or mantras and meditates on a particular pastime in a particular place in relation to Krishna. You can, of course, if it's Krishna mantra, Gopal mantra. And that's what mantra upasana is. I'll say it again. It's chanting a particular mantra that's identifying a portion of a particular pastime or a feature of a meditation upon Krishna's form, but he specifically says a particular pastime. And when one chants it in a proper manner, by this regular mantra upasana method, one can literally see Krishna in that pastime. One can see Krishna. We've been reading and hearing about the hearing and chanting process allows one to see Krishna face to face. This is that process specifically described in Brahma Samhita. And then a further advanced stage is this second item, Sva Rasaki, where Jiva Goswami compares from the lake, you can enter into the river, where the river is flowing, so similarly, where one not only sees the form of Krishna performing a particular pastime, but one enters into the pastime. And the moving pastimes continue and continue and continue by this very same method. But it's a more mature stage, and it's spontaneous outflow of heart's spiritual love for Krishna. The very same language he puts in twice. So it's very, he's very specific about his choice of words. Spontaneous outflow of heart's spiritual love for Krishna. Sva Rasaki. So what Brahma Samhita, what Lord Brahma did was this. His long tapa was this. He did mantra upasana. And the fruit of that mantra upasana created the Govinda Stotra, or created his realization. Well, let's see what Prabhupada says here. Brahma, by dint of his searching self-consciousness, became well acquainted with the searching self-consciousness as his mantra upasana, done in that spirit of wishing to know himself and Krishna, became well acquainted with the ocean of truth. All the truths of the Vedas revealed to him, and with the help of those essences of the Vedas, he offered this hymn, that's the Govinda prayers, to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. Sriman Mahaprabhu has taught this hymn, that's the Govinda prayers, to his favorite disciples, inasmuch as it fully contains all the transcendental truths regarding the Vaishnava philosophy. And I put this in bold print, same purport. This is text 28, just before the first of the Govinda prayers, which is 29. He writes, readers are requested to study and try to enter into the spirit of this hymn, stotra, with great care and attention as a regular daily function. Now, Prabhupada took this passage and changed it to, the hearers of this record are requested to study. So here's the soundbite again.
The audience, the hearers of this record are requested to study and try to enter into the spirit of this hymn with great care and attention as a regular daily function.
Prabhupada was a follower of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, strict follower of his spiritual master. So what his spiritual master wanted, Prabhupada took up and gave to the world. This is, you know, again, before we knew anything about anything, he's way ahead of the game, preparing us just through sound vibration. Now, we didn't understand mantra upasana, didn't even have Brahma Samhita, we didn't have a brain in our head. But he gave us the method. At a very, very early stage, he wanted us to do this. And part of what he gave us without explaining the mantra upasana method was our greeting of the deities every morning. It's mantra upasana as a regular daily function. But the part that's kind of missing is studying and trying to enter into the spirit of this hymn with great care and attention. That part is kind of weak. Because tendency is, it's a ritual, and we do the ritual, and it sounds, you know, Jamuna's singing is very nice, and George Harrison background music is very nice, and then we go on to the Guru Puja. But it's, if we are thoughtful and we understand what it is that we're being offered, it's a process whereby one can see Krishna, but purify, as Brahma did, and then understand our self-identity and the identity of Krishna, and even see Krishna face to face, as Brahma did. So, it certainly fits in with the theme of hearing and chanting and remembering. And so, I'm going to take you through a little exercise of mantra upasana. First part is we'll recite together, and then the meanings of the words, and then comes the meditation part. We'll do that at the end after we chant together and understand, meditate upon the understanding of the meaning of the mantra. Because in Hari Bhakti Vilas, one of the injunctions in chanting of mantras is to meditate upon the meaning of the mantra. Of course, someone can get spiritual benefit if they don't know the meaning of the mantra. But if one meditates upon the meaning of the mantra, then more completely will one get the benefit. Okay, so this is going to be sung by Mahatma Prabhu. Let's just, we can sing along with him.
Hey, Ramananda, Aravinda, the light of Daksha, Varavadam, Samasitam, Buddha, Sundaram, Kandarva, Bhakti, Kamaniya, Visesha, Sova, Govinda, Mali, Purusha, Maham, Pajara,
okay, so now we're going to go through the phrases within the mantra so that we can meditate upon the meaning of the mantra, and then we'll do it one more time, the actual meditation. Translation: I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is adept in playing on his flute, with blooming eyes like lotus petals, with head decked with peacock's feather, with the figure of beauty tinged with the hue of blue clouds, and his unique loveliness charming millions of cupids. So, Venum Kanvantam is indicating Krishna's attractive flute playing. And it's not just like melodious sounds. It's extremely powerful, charming through this flute. We'll describe a little bit when we were in Vrindavan visiting Ter Kadamba. Some of you have been to Vrindavan. Some of you know where Ter Kadamba is, and it's perhaps my favorite place in all of Vrindavan, next to Govardhan Hill. And it's a place where, near Nandagram, near Nanda Maharaj's palace, where at the end of the day, Krishna would climb a Kadamba tree, and he would call. Ter means call. He would call the cows. But he didn't go like that, or get one of these microphones. He played upon his flute, and the sound of the flute indicated somehow the names of the groups of cows. And when different flute sounds would call this group, they would moo, and their tails would raise, and they'd come running to that Kadamba tree, having been called by Krishna, because they had such love for Krishna. Then he would play another sound from his flute, calling by name another group of cows, and they would moo and come running to receive Krishna's attention and affection, and like that. So his flute from that same place, Ter Kadamba, would sometimes call the gopis by names, and they would come hearing the sound of Krishna's flute. Or at Vamsivat, Krishna called the gopis, and it was not just a nice melodious sound they wanted to hear. The description is it forcibly called them to come to him. Of course, they were quite willing to come to him. But it's very powerful, transcendental potencies beyond any worldly conception. So, many wonderful paintings depicting, of course, Krishna with his flute. And we meditate upon Krishna in that way. Venum Kanvantam Aravinda Talaya Taksham, that's coming next. So, murtis of Krishna playing upon his flute. So, Aravinda Dalaya Taksham. This indicates a lotus. The eyes of Krishna are lotus-like. And blooming eyes, like lotus petals. It's a meditation upon Krishna's form. His flute playing and his transcendental eyes blooming like lotus petals. And varhavatam sam, that's these. So when we sing these prayers and hear every morning Jamuna's recording of these prayers, we should meditate upon the words and the meaning of the words, because it's describing beautiful features of Krishna. So where there's peacock feathers, decorated with peacock feathers. Sometimes Radharani, just seeing peacocks spread their plumes, she would go mad in ecstasy, thinking naturally of her beloved Krishna. So here's Radha Shyama Sundar in Vrindavan wearing their peacock outfit. And Krishna Balaram wearing same peacock outfit. It's supposed to be the sound of thunder. Can you? But I didn't hear it. There we go. When there is a Sundarangam, his angam, his limbs are like a dark rain cloud. We'll go back and do it again. Turn the volume up a little bit. It's nice. Here comes Krishna. His hue, bodily complexion, is like that of a dark rain cloud. His limbs are very, very beautiful. Okay, that's it. No more thunder. And Kandarpa Koti Kamaniya Vishesha Shobham. These features just described, his unique loveliness is charming millions of Cupids. That's Cupid, by the way. And here's an angel chasing after hearts, and Cupid zaps such people. But such Cupids, Kandarpas, become charmed. Millions of such Cupids become charmed by Krishna's unique loveliness. A nice scriptural example is Naranarayan Rishi, who Kandarpa, or Cupid, was sent by Lord Indra from the heavenly planets because Indra was getting the heebie-jeebies again, that maybe Narayan and Naranarayan, the austerities were going to, they wanted to take over his heavenly kingdom, so he wanted to get Kandarpa to go and fire some arrows and, like, you know, have him become attracted to material energy again. Anyway, when Narayana understood the mission of Kandarpa, bringing all the best of the heavenly damsels, from his own body he exhibited unlimited numbers of goddesses of fortune from his body, the beauty of which surpassed the best of the beauties of the heavenly damsels. And Kandarpa went, wow. And it was understood the foolishness of his attempt, and offered great apology for his mission that he was sent on. So Cupid, or Kandarpa, becomes attracted by the beauty, the charming loveliness of Krishna. Millions of such Cupids become attracted. In fact, everyone becomes attracted. In the spiritual world, it's not only the gopis are attracted, but the deer are attracted, the birds are attracted, the peacock is attracted, the river is attracted, the trees are attracted, everyone is attracted to the all-attractive Krishna. In fact, Krishna, welcome guys, Krishna's beauty even attracts Krishna. There's this nice description that one time Krishna saw his reflection in the polished marble, and he became, oh, what is that wonderful form? Krishna's beauty attracts even Krishna. But of course, special, most of all, topmost is the attraction experienced by the gopis for Krishna's charming loveliness. Here they're embracing tamal tree just because the tamal is blackish like Krishna is blackish. So we have deity worship where after the devotees engage very nicely in bathing, dressing and decorating the deity, we come before the deity to offer our respects, where Govindam, he who is the, gives, increases the pleasure of the cows, and of course all the other residents of Vrindavan. He's the original person. He's the source of all existence, spiritual and material. He's the original person, Adi Purusham. Tamaham Vajami, we engage in his worship. And now we'll go on to the next one. So we're going to do the same thing. We'll go through the phrases like this. This is Satchitananda. His vigraha, his form, is made of Satchitananda and is ujvala, full of dazzling splendor. He whose form is Satchitananda and full of dazzling splendor. Like that, we'll meditate. Translation, I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, whose transcendental form is full of bliss, truth, and substantiality, and is thus full of the most dazzling splendor. Each of the limbs of that transcendental figure possesses in himself the full-fledged functions of all the organs, and eternally sees, maintains, and manifests the infinite universe is both spiritual and mundane. So, Angani Yasya Sakalendriya Vrittimanti. Lord Krishna enjoys transcendental pastimes with his devotees in the spiritual world and maintains the material world just by his icha, by his wishing or his desire, his will. That's Krishna. So how does he maintain his all-powerful will? This verse is saying, this portion of the verse is saying that his indriyas are all-powerful, interchangeable with all of the other indriyas. Each of the limbs of that transcendental figure possesses in himself the full-fledged functions of all the organs. The example that Prabhupada gives commonly when explaining this is the judo chop of Krishna up here, where the washerman was carrying the clothes of King Kamsa, and Krishna's hand acted like a sword. It doesn't say he did a judo chop, it just says he touched his hand to the neck of the washerman, and the two parts of his body got separated. Now, I don't want anybody to meditate what it would take to separate a head from the rest of the body, but it's not an ordinary, just like touching. Krishna's, even with a sword, Krishna's hand separated. So his hand acted like a sword, and there's the garments, there's the poor washerman, and there's Krishna and the cowherd boys and Balaram being decorated with the clothing of the king. Or another example in the same Leela, Krishna, when he approached Kubja, just with the touch of the tips of his fingers and his toes down here, pressing on the toes of Kubja, he raised this Trivikra, hunched in three forms, into a great and tall figure. Pretty powerful limbs. Or another example, Krishna's swallowing the forest fire. We heard that description Prema Charangani gave us. It's not an ordinary process of breathing. Who can do this? Or when Krishna was carrying, receiving fruits from the vendor, fruit vendor, her basket became filled with jewels. So Krishna has potencies with his limbs that others, it's unfathomable. In the description of Ramayana, when Ram wanted the ocean personified to come and assist him in crossing over to Lanka, he didn't come right away. So Ram, simply by glancing, of course there's another version that says he shot an arrow, but by his glancing, the ocean began to boil. That's pretty powerful eyes. So, similarly, Krishna, just by hearing the prayers, he can eat with his ears or with his eyes. The senses are interchangeable with other senses. So, Krishna's manifesting this quality. Here's a quote from Adi Leela 9:25. The tree of devotional service is not of this material world. It grows in the spiritual world where there is no distinction between one part of the body and another. So Krishna manifests this when he performs his pastimes, but the whole of the spiritual world is like this. So not to be likened to things of this world, and this prayer is meditating on this feature of Krishna. The same purport, Prabhupada writes, it is something like a tree of sugar for whichever part of such a tree one tastes, it is always sweet. The tree of bhakti has varieties of branches, leaves, and fruits, but they are all meant for the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So as Krishna's body is like that, factually the whole spiritual world is like that, and the tree of devotional service is like that too. It's inconceivable and extraordinary. Then Pashyanti Panti. Pashyanti, he sees and he maintains. He sees and he maintains the spiritual and material realm. This is the power of Krishna's indriyas, his senses. Kalyanti Chiram Jaganti. He manifests innumerable universes. This is Govinda. Kalyanti Chiram Jaganti. He manifests infinite universes, both spiritual and mundane. That's Mahavishnu and manifesting innumerable universes. His transcendental form is full of bliss, truth, and substantiality. Satchitananda. And thus is full of the most dazzling splendor. Krishna Balaram. Govinda. That's Govinda in New York. Adi Purusham, he's the original person. Tamaham Bhajami. Srila Prabhupada performing the first arti of Krishna Balaram after they were installed in Vrindavan. Wonderful event. So now we're going to do the meditation part. The information part is over. Now it's the experience or entering into the spirit of this hymn. So the song is going to play, the same one we hear every morning. There's going to be some beautiful photographs of deities of around the world, Radha Krishna deities. So it's real easy to get captivated by the beauty of the Radha Krishna deities around the world, but try your best standing before these forms of the Lord and meditate on and enter into the spirit of the mantra.
Krishna. The process, once again, of mantra, upasana, is the process which Lord Brahma engaged in to achieve his self-realization. In our age, presently, Maha Mantra especially, but as we heard Prabhupada describing from Gajendra Moksha, in addition to Maha Mantra, some prayers, he gave two options, and there can be many additional options, but the principle of hearing very carefully, entering, meditating on the meaning of the mantra, entering into the spirit of the mantra, and absorbing our consciousness in that way, can help achieve, bring us to the stage of literally, our Goswamis did this, they entered into Krishna's pastimes while they were within their physical body, and then that which they experienced, they then wrote in literatures to share with us Krishna's pastimes. This is the method that they engaged in. Mantra Upasana and the Svarasaki method. Jiva Goswami writes in his commentary, there are some persons, even today, who are perfect in this way. Of course, the Goswamis of Vrindavan, and who knows if there's someone perfect today, literally. But the method is accessible. Prabhupada engaged us in it, and we should try, cultivate, to take it up in the way that he recommended for us. So there's a little presentation on mantra upasana. Any questions or comments? I know I've got my back to you all, but... Anything anybody would like to bring up? Yes? Why should it be?
I mean, like Prabhupada specifically recommends that in addition to Maha Mantra,
in addition to,
you should also chant some other mantra. And
well, it's not exactly chant some other mantra.
Do mantra upasana.
Yeah. Well, engage in deep meditation upon something that brings you closer to Krishna. Why not? Is my answer. Because it will help us. In addition, the Maha Mantra is the Maha Mantra. Its special power or efficacy is awakening. It's a call to please engage us in your service, because we've forgotten his service and him. So it's awakening, it's specific. And then who's him? So these mantras are him. It's details of course, within the Maha Mantra, everything is there. Everything is there. Within these prayers, there's details about his eyes, aspects of him, the sound of his flute, his unique loveliness that's charming millions of cupids. There are aspects of him that stimulate love and appreciation, further appreciation for him. That's why. Yes.
Dhruva Jivara. Hare Krishna.
Is there a difference in meditating upon mantras that are more sort of not so focused on the form or the activities of Krishna, rather like the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj, which, you know, can look at the material world and talk about the various defects in the material world?
That's yet a third thing, and that's also very nice. Now, I'll speak from what Jiva Goswami writes. I'm just referring to our exalted Acharya in my reply. He indicates there are specific mantras that are of that category, mantra upasana. And I can't remember the numbers, but he gives two verses. This is not to say others are not, but he gives two verses that are mantra upasana mantras. And our Gopal mantra is another. It's that, because that's where the reference comes from. But then when Jiva Goswami comments on it, he says there are other mantras that are also in addition to Gopal mantra. Some of these, not necessarily all of these. But so then you're bringing up, what about other verses or prayers? And, you know, we've been doing it. I mean, we got Sloka Raj over here, and he's leading us in chanting various slokas. So that's yet a third thing. So the whole of Srimad Bhagavatam is filled with glorifications and prayers about the Lord and the process of devotional service and his devotees and the qualities of the devotees and the merit of the process itself. And they're also wonderful. It's yet a third thing that we're certainly encouraged to do. So is it okay? Yeah, it's okay. Learn those verses, memorize those verses, recite those verses. That's not exactly what you're asking.
The question was, is there qualitative difference between doing the mantra upasana?
It's just different. It's just different. It's another feature of bhakti. Okay?
Hare Krishna. Since there are so many mantras, I want to know, how can I go about selecting?
It's been selected for you. Just take it. It's on a silver platter. It's got your name on it. Take it. Someone else. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Is there a reason why we...
Is there a what?
Is there a reason?
Is there a reason?
Why we don't discuss or meditate on Krishna's pastimes outside of Vrindavan?
Is there a reason why we don't meditate on Krishna's pastimes outside of Vrindavan? We do.
But not that much. I mean...
Not that much. Well, that's, you know, we do. We do. We do.
Because they cover significant, because it's significant portion of Krishna's pastimes on earth.
So, well, I'll just tell you, take the microphone from him. I just spent, when I was in Seattle, over the Thanksgiving weekend, I spent 25 hours describing Sri Brahma Samhita, and maybe three of those 25 hours are about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. A lot of it was about creation. And let's take, you know, the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. How much of Srimad Bhagavatam is on the subject matter of Vrindavan compared to the volume of subject matter of Krishna outside of Vrindavan, or the other incarnations of the Lord, or the process of creation? Or so, you know, we followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we especially appreciate Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. We give special attention to that for a reason. There are, you know, many ways to say what that reason is. There are many ways, many reasons. But we're attracted to that feature of Krishna. But we should understand, He's everything. And so everything is part of what's in Srimad Bhagavatam and part of what we discuss besides Krishna's pastime. But we're especially interested because that's his original form. And that mood of love is unique and all attractive, and we like it. So we talk about it and his pastimes and his loving dealings in Vrindavan with his loving devotees. And we talk about so many other things too. Someone else? What about anyone on the ladies' side? Okay, you had your chance. It's okay.
Guru Maharaj, in the...
You saw it once in New Vrindavan. You saw this once in New Vrindavan. Yeah. So, go ahead.
Maharaj, in the definition of mantra upasana, that the slide you showed, it's... there were two things which was... one was the self-dedicatory word was used.
I'm listening.
And so I'm not sure what that means. And also the inaudibly recited, so is it mantra upasana has to be done inaudibly or...
We just did it audibly. But commonly, Gayatri or the Gopal mantra commonly is chanted inaudibly. So the process of mantra upasana is commonly inaudible. When devotees chant their Gayatri mantras, for example, they're not all... Anyway... It's inaudibly, silently or softly. And, you know, self-dedicatory, you know, you need a Bhaktisiddhanta dictionary. It's focused upon, singularly focused upon, the true self. Beyond, you know, other than, you know, the temporary, illusory, duality thing that happens all the time. That our attention generally is absorbed in. It's the other kind. Self-dedicatory. That's what the meaning is. Yes?
I was just thinking, Guru Maharaj, the process that is given to us is in general very exact and, you know, tailored to, you know, the individual. Sometimes it's very personal. And we see in the pastimes, in many, many different pastimes in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in which devotees are given a mantra. And there are so many different mantras that are given. But I have a question if it have to do with a specific mood or personality of the devotee in which they receive a particular mantra. Say, Lord Brahma received the Gopal mantra, Dhruva received Om Narayanana Maha, and so on like that.
Dhruva received Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya like that.
Okay. My answer is not necessarily. Maybe, but not necessarily. That's my answer. In to my knowledge at least, in our recent sampradaya, at least our recent sampradaya, the mantras are standard mantras, not like, you know, this one's for you and that one's for somebody else. They're standard mantras. I'm aware of this, that the mantras that we chant, that we receive when we receive our Gayatri mantras, they're standard mantras that other sampradayas also know. And whether they receive those mantras or not, I don't know. without the detail. So they're standard mantras. Okay. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, would it be offensive to chant mantras outside the disciplic succession? Like, for example, some Chinese or Korean centers for health benefits as part of yoga, they chant mantras. So would it be offensive for an initiated devotee to chant those mantras? They're definitely not devotional services. It's for health benefits or other reasons.
Well, it's not... I want to be careful in giving the answer. It's not offensive. It's just misplaced. And it can result in, you know, the considering the names of the demigods to equal to or independent of the name of Lord Vishnu. If that enters, that's an illicit offense. But it's misplaced. The wish of whatever the mantra is intending to achieve is included already in Krishna, because Krishna is the source of everything. So as Krishna indicates in Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, those who do those things, avidhi purvakam, it's misplaced. It's without proper knowledge, those who do those things. So if your question was, should devotees chant those mantras, the answer is no. But your question wasn't that. Is it offensive? It's not offensive. It depends on the mentality or the consciousness of that. But it's for sure it's misplaced. We don't require that. You want to comment on that one, Dravida? You got a microphone? And it works, too.
Horrible.
So I get the impression this is something to do with like Chinese medicine, to chant a certain kind of mantra. Well, forget the mantra for a minute. To take Chinese medicine for some disease is clearly not a problem. I mean...
No problem.
Not a problem. I think the danger, the danger is in... In fact, you're using the same process that we use for, you know, going back to Godhead for some material cause. And you say, well, yeah, but I'm just using it to get better, you know. But the danger is that you're going to start mixing them. And as Maharaj said, although you might, you know, whatever the mantra is, you might not be worshipping a demigod, but you're definitely going out of the realm of Rakshasatiti Vishvaso.
Yeah,
you know, which means that be confident that Krishna will protect. When she said that, I was thinking, well, we have the Nisringa Kavacha.
Yeah,
I mean, the Nisringa Kavacha also, you know, in addition to getting rid of vinartas and things, there's even some mention there you get rid of your diseases. So why not use that? You know, within our Vedic paradigm, the tradition. So it's dangerous to start getting into that. You know, so that would be my response.
Yes.
Hey, Krishna Maharaj. I'd like to know what are your favorite mantras.
I'd like to know what? Turn a little further away because I can't.
What are your favorite mantras other than going the prayers?
My favorite mantra? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
I mean, other than this going the prayers, Maha Mantra.
Many of them, many of them. Many of them. Many of them. And they're not all, you know, like the other question over here, Jamuna Jivana's question, they're not all necessarily mantra upasana mantras, but some favorite mantras. One of my favorite ones is the mantra of Raghunath Das Goswami, where he's honoring Rupa Goswami, praying for dust from the feet of Rupa Goswami upon his head, birth after birth. With straw in his teeth, he's bowing down, pleading for that. I like that mantra. Adidana Strana Dantaya. It's a prayer. It's not exactly a mantra. Last question.
Guru Maharaj, Padma Purana says that if a mantra not received through a parampara, a sampradaya, does not have the effect, or it has effect like a snake, milk touched by the lips of a serpent. So my question is, elsewhere in Ramayana we see that Lord Ram says that even if one jokingly or deridingly says my name, still I, you know, give him shelter.
It says the same thing in Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 6.
Okay. So the question is, there are people who don't belong to any sampradaya, but they still attract a lot of people in chanting the names of Krishna. What kind of benefit they get? Will they eventually improve?
Well, hopefully. There's benefit, but the full benefit cannot be received. It's not like it's a zero, but the full benefit cannot be received that way. The intended benefit, the full intended benefit of mantra will not be received unless it is mantra received through disciplic succession. And specifically it says, if one has received such mantra in such a manner, then one should again receive that mantra in disciplic succession. Without detail, but that's what it says. Okay, you're the addendum to the last question.
Sorry, Maharaj. I left at 8:25 because I need to take a walk so I could stay lively. So I don't know if you already covered this, but is it significant to mention the difference between Krishna mantra and Krishna nam? I don't know if you talked about that.
I didn't at all.
Because in the CC, when Mahaprabhu was speaking to Prakashananda Saraswati, he talks about how he achieves liberation by Krishna mantra, and by Krishna nam, he's delivered to the lotus feet of Krishna. So sometimes, I'm wondering, this is my question, when we hear about, unless you receive a mantra through sampradaya, is that referring to like the Krishna mantra as opposed to Krishna nam?
I believe so. But you know, it's a technical question that I can't say authoritatively, but I believe so, or think so. That's what it's referring to. Mantra, not nam. Because nam, it is independent of anything. Purushcharya Vidhi and anything else. It stands alone. Okay. Oh. Go ahead. We're at 9 o'clock. You got 30 seconds.
Great, Shlomo. Thank you for the class. It's for my daughter, I'm asking.
For your daughter, you're asking? Where's your daughter?
She's sitting there.
Oh. Okay.
So and she asked, usually we hear that Krishna is black in color, so why Kishori is white?
He can appear however he likes. I think this question was asked of Prabhupada on some occasions, and I can't recall what Prabhupada said. Can you recall what Prabhupada said about this? Yes, what did he say? Huh?
I'm confused with the name and naming of the deities.
Oh, that's the naming of the deities. Where is Jitendriya? Not here. So, I'll look it up. How's that? I'll look up to see what Prabhupada said. But Krishna's form is blackish, like a monsoon cloud. It's not just Kishore. You saw some other deities in Bombay, Radharasa Bihari, and other places that the deity is, Krishna is white. But that's his deity form, which he can present as he wishes. And his eternal transcendental form is Shyam. Is that okay? Is that okay? I'll research and let you know what Prabhupada said. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.